when I found out that I was doing karma, I simply quit. Well, I'll just show up. But that wouldn't be enough, because the best way to preserve is to show up transparently. I have been called a karma type person.
Really?
Yes, Erica, even me.
You can't have my papers.
We have stuff to do. I can't get distracted. And there was a discussion, I think, last week. How is it that we get these attributes? How is it that one sort of may predominate?
One sort of what?
Predominate.
Oh.
I mean, Emily did a fine job doing Padma, but listening to her, it felt to me like she has to sort of access Padma through Ratna, which we'll talk about next week. It was just an observation I had. And, of course, Michael over there has no trouble accessing Vajra. And so, you know, I don't know where they come from, but I think the environment has a substantial role to play. And the conditions under which we grew up. I was thinking about karma and the fact that my four siblings all have, with the odd exception of my brother Patrick, who I think was a changeling, the rest of them have strong karma. And I grew up in a family which both parents had drinking problems and there wasn't enough money. And we were all very well educated. My parents were in law school, but we could never make the country club crowd. So we all hated the bourgeoisie, except for my changeling brother Patrick, who's a happy member of the bourgeoisie. So when you think about what may dominate in you, obviously, see how your friends respond to you, like how they responded to me right here. But also, what you do, but also look at what your world asked of you from the beginning. So, now, so we're going to get started in a transparent way with what karma is about. It's about getting stuff done. And in the interest of being transparent, here is my to-do list for the week. And so I'm going to fulfill my fantasy and cross stuff off.
Oh, yes, I'd love to do that.
I knew Evelyn could hardly restrain herself. So I have to present the Waltham talk, like right here, right now.
Yeah, okay? You can't cross that off yet.
You didn't do it yet.
No, but I can cross off the components. Listening to Emily and Michael's talk. Done.
Okay.
Hey. And I also had to do my profile and invoice to Emily. Got that done yesterday. You got my email?
I got it. Thank you.
Yes.
That was right on time.
I had to make sure that my picture was even better than Michael Fagan. And my biography even more impressive than Michael Levin. You don't have to be the judge, but, you know, I had to try. Create an outline, which you'll see a draft of the outline in just a moment. I had to call Miriam. I wasn't sure whether she'd be able to come with me. I'm afraid she has to work. Get easel paper.
Yeah.
Done.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Then I have other stuff. I'm closing an office, so I have to call the landlord. I have to call one of my co-office mates. Give some stuff to the Salvation Army. Now, don't you feel good to see it?
Wow, you're doing a great job.
You know? Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, not quite. Finished blurb for summer course. And hardly looked at it. Didn't get to it. I got to this stuff. But that sort of helps me.
You're doing my assignments instead.
That's right.
He did what?
He's doing my assignments.
What about
Asuras? Asura, symbols. I put that because I woke up this morning thinking that I really needed to add some things about that. So I put that on the list also. And I did both of them. You're right. Cross that off. I had my poor Italian teacher who has to listen to me fracture his madre lingua. I couldn't quite do an article, but at least I got a vocabulary list. Ah. We have practice books. It's the end of the month. I love to tally up my hours and my numbers. Okay? It causes me great joy. Ta-da! What's that?
Nobody knows a practice book.
Oh, I should have brought one. Oh. They're like little calendars.
You forgot to put it on your list. That's why you didn't do it.
Right. They're like little calendars, and you can write down. There's a various liturgical stuff is there, and you can write down just how much practice you do that day. And for people like me, it's a godsend. It's like I can like turn the page and say, "Oh, I've done real good this month," or "Not so good." But it's empirical. You can't say, "Well, I practice a lot." It's like how much is a lot?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I have a client who was supposed to see me. Oh, I got to do some relevant reading for my Sunday. I'm almost there. A little more to do. Return the library book.
Jump up.
Ta-da!
ATM.
I had to ask Michael Fagan about the book that was offered by Nalanda Translation, the early songs of the Vidyara.
It's on its way. Your copy is on its way.
Oh, see that?
See, this is called all accomplishing action.
Yes.
I didn't have to do a bloody thing. That was done. And I have an outline of an article. I have to send up an emailer, but that's tomorrow. So how do we get stuff done? When I was in my formative years, working at Fernald School down the street over there, I used to do classes on time management. It turns out I'm really good at time management. And the reason I'm good at time management is that I don't manage time. I let time manage me. Because there's a certain number of things that have to happen. You have a certain amount of time to do it. How do you sort things out so that what has to happen happens, and what doesn't have to happen doesn't have to happen yet? And so I've loved time management. I ran the kitchen at Karma Choing up in Vermont for a few years. It's like I never got a meal out late.
Of course.
It didn't happen. Because I knew that lunch was at 1, dinner was at 7, we have this, 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 and this. Okay, let's sequence it. That's all. Managing space.
I'm not the next job I have for you. For Chaming Rinpoche's visit. You've been nobly tapped.
I've been nobly tapped.
You shouldn't be too good at this karma stuff.
Yes. By the way, for those of you who want a career in the Buddhist Sangha, do not let people know you have talent. You'll never be left alone.
Don't let Emily know.
Don't let Emily know. Oh, she's figured it out already.
Oh, I already know. I know what everybody's good at.
It's the opportunism of the karma energy. So, managing space is different. I think there are two aspects of managing space. One aspect is the fact that a cluttered environment creates a cluttered mind. And if you want to get really confused, just pile things up in the room and see what happens to you. And I think there's a place where feng shui is actually very helpful because it helps us organize our space. However, I know that when I'm working on a project, especially when I'm working on like an article or when I was working on my Dante book, I had piles all over the place. Because that's what the environment necessitated. I need to have stuff, even though to an outside observer it looked like a complete pigsty, I knew where everything was and I needed everything that was there. So karma energy, it's not about being pretty. You save that for the Padma and the Ratna folks. It's about what needs to happen. It's very pragmatic. Pragmatic is from the word praxis, which is a word to do. So also,
the
the outline of tonight.
Okay.
Okay? Being a human doing, I decided to call it. And one of the things that I like to do, especially when I do work in, you know, small groups, is I'll do an outline and I try to organize things. By the way, there's more to me than karma, but I'm just, you know, try to organize. I write outlines. I will go to a coffee shop or go outside on the deck, like this morning, with a piece of legal paper, and I'll just jot things down. But then I make sure not to take my outline with me. I throw out my outline. Why would I do that? Am I crazy? Don't answer that when knowing it.
Wow, that shocks me. I can't imagine that.
Throw out the outline.
Certainly, you're prepared, but then it's kind of spontaneous. But you're, I don't know, skillful means kind of thing. I mean, you do what needs to be done at the time, but you do know where you're going.
Exactly. I know where I want to go. I know what I want to do. And I'd also want to be able to hear what people say and converse with them. So, in interests, here's my outline. I am unfortunately not blessed with very good penmanship. My mother thinks I chewed lead paint when I was a toddler.
Did she put it in your crib?
It was the only way to slow me down. Yes, I joke that I'm of ADHD, I'm the H. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about various aspects of the karma family, and we're going to engage in conversation, and you have a chance to check out our work to see if we've actually covered the material. So you can be my karma energy for me. And we'll see how I do. By the way, I really liked your contributions last week's group. I think other people here should emulate your example.
Nobody remembers that.
I thought you were very good. Okay.
I think you said, where did this come from? And I said, from a copier, photocopier.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, which kind of interfered with you, I think.
So this is the mandala, the enlightened mandala, the neurotic mandala. We know that it has directions. We know that Padma is the west, Vajra is the east, Buddha is in the center. Michael will do that in a couple weeks. Erica will do Ratna in the south, and I get the north. The temperature is cold, although the season is summer, and the color is green with a shade of black, because black is actually included as part of a karma thing. So, what?
I'm watching what Michael's about to do.
He's just looking.
What was I about to do?
I don't know. You look like you were about to do something.
I'm on my best behavior now.
Yeah, you're okay. Trying to stir something up.
There is an element system, and we talked about Vajra being water, mm-hmm. Padma being fire. There is no air element as such in this system. It's called wind, which is actually very appropriate for karma, because wind has a sense of directionality. You go running, you know what direction the wind is going in. It's really good. You say, oh, I'm running really well. What's the wind at my back? I have to turn around. Oh, well, I'm not going to run so well to get home. So wind has a sense of directionality. It's also constantly moving. It's also energizing. And it allows things to happen, like sailing, like we're using wind as energy, sources of energy. So, and we know that some people have a quality of wind. Remember the old Mr. Clean commercials?
Mr. Clean makes a sheen.
Yes, and he just zips through the room. Sorry. I mean, you should see me at home. My wife has a lot of Buddha energy. She sits on the couch with her dog. I'm here, I'm there, I'm downstairs, I'm in the bedroom, I'm on, you know. It's just constant motion.
And you're a runner.
And I'm a runner.
Good.
Goodness grief. I spend I work with a stand-up contraption on my computer.
What's that?
So I'm all. What's
desk,
that?
Like down. My desk.
Yeah, my desk.
Oh, I need
oh they're yeah. great. Yeah. They really, especially when you're talking to somebody, you have more body in it. Mm-hmm. So,
is it fair to say that if wind is the element, that therefore the energy can be very erratic, because you're blown this way and then it goes this way and then it goes, you know, that it's inconsistent?
Okay. Let me share. Very good. That's a very good comment. Let me tell you a word of wisdom to about my fellow karma energy folks. It can be like that if you try to do too much at once. You're going here, you're going there, you're going there, and it feels like that kind of whirling wind. And what happens to me is I start myself doing that, and it's either a small scale or a large scale, and I become overwhelmed. It can be either cleaning the kitchen or doing multiple projects. So I talk about the ocean liner of my attention span, which means I just finish one thing, and it takes a long time to get to the next thing. And so I purposely change direction when something is complete. That's the only way I stay sane. Because if I ever had nothing to do, I'd get depressed.
Yeah.
You know, anyway, I was at Karma Chilling once, and this was early. I didn't think anyone knew me. And I was sitting at the couch, and I wasn't doing anything. And someone walked up to me and said, "Joe, you're not doing something."
What's wrong?
Exactly. Are you all right? I'm just not doing anything. I'm just sitting here. Okay. Now, the karma energy, and we haven't talked about the realms, but I think it's helpful to bring it up in this context. Mm-hmm. There are six realms, five energies. They smush together a couple of them under passion. But the karma realm is the so-called asura realm. And I've been thinking a lot about asuras today because it was on my to-do list. Anybody follow the Celtics last week? Perfect example of right now, this week, of being in the asura realm. They've been beaten by Cleveland like three consecutive years in the playoffs. They were ahead. They were in the seventh game. They were about to beat them. It was basically LeBron James and this four dwarfs, and they lost. Imagine what it's like to be the Celtics. Not just heartbreaking, but hungry. It's like, all right, I'm going to beat these SOBs next time, whatever it takes. Because they've been trying, they came so close to beating Cleveland, and they couldn't. It's a perfect example of asura realm. In Indian mythology, the asuras were sort of they were sometimes translated as the demigods. They were the gods, god realm wannabes. And they had a pitched battle with the gods, and they lost. So they're continually resentful because they're second place. Greek mythology is different. In Greek mythology, the gods beat the Titans. The younger generation beat the older generation, but not in Indian mythology. And so the asuras sometimes called the jealous gods. They have it pretty good, but they're resentful because they're not number one. I was watching the Olympics, and it turns out, I forget where I got this information, that if you get gold, of course, you're really happy. If you get bronze, you're really happy because you got a medal. You get silver, you could have gotten gold. You're not as happy. Huh. That's like the Asura realm. So what do people in the Asura realm have to do? They have to work harder. They have to put more effort in. They have to, importantly, not make mistakes. They have to look for the vulnerabilities in others and exploit them. There's something that can be very mean-spirited about Asura realm / karma energy. Hi, Janet. Suddenly you...
Interesting point.
Well, think about it. We have, so far we've been introduced to Padma and passion. It's hard to dislike passion, right? No one's ashamed of passion. We, if anything, we kind of crank it up. Aggression, anger, most of us can do justified anger pretty well. You know, we have our outrage list, and you know, we can sort of feed ourselves. But karma is envy. Who likes that? And it's a really interesting kind of thing.
So is that what an athlete needs?
We'll get there. And actually, the answer might be is yes. They want to be LeBron James and go to the finals and beat the crap out of the Golden State Warriors. They really, really do. And if they're neurotic, they'll just stay resentful. If they're not neurotic, they'll take an objective look at things and see what they can do better next time. So envy is actually a, you know, when language changes, we take words and we kind of whittle them down. Envy comes originally from the Latin invidia, means seeing within or seeing in. And Italian is still invidia. But it turned out to be the French changed the I into an E, and of course they don't do too many consonants, so they've switched a few vowels together.
We still have invidious.
We still have invidious. And invidious means malevolent.
That's right.
Exactly. There's a malevolence.
That's the con name. Yeah.
In how is invidia or envy malevolent? Well, what is the difference between envy and jealousy? Because there's some overlap between them. Sometimes people use them interchangeably. What do you think? I'm good at envy and jealousy. So, but
envy is a specific thing you want that somebody has, and jealousy is sort of stagnant, sort of a feeling, a state of something. Or I might have had it backwards.
Good start. Okay.
I think envy, like covetous.
Thou shalt not covet.
Whatever. I think envy is covet. Coveting. So it's specific.
Coveting.
It's
good,
it's
good.
Like, it hurts you in some way. Like, to be envious of somebody, it's not good for you.
Uh-uh.
Envy seems like it's a envy of some of their qualities. But jealousy is you want the particular things.
I think it's the opposite. I think envy is an action.
Envy,
you want something.
Well, this is good.
So you could use it as hot, even though it feels negative, you could use this positive energy to get something like that. There's jealousy, I think.
So the jealousy is more like, why do you have that and I don't?
Ah.
Whereas the envy is, I could get it.
Yeah.
But you have it.
Yes.
But you have it.
Yeah. You have it and I could get it.
I think that's
and jealousy is. Because jealousy is much more, you think of it when, like, somebody has, like, a particular partner or something. So it's not like,
it's
you can have that partner, and in the olden days, we didn't do, we could all have that partner. Nowadays it's different, so you could.
It's all different.
Well, yes. Like when you and I were growing up, we said we could all have the same partner.
Okay. I feel like you would use envy more like, you know, oh, that person is so nice. I envy that person. I want to, you know, like you aspire to be more like that person. Whereas jealous is more like, oh, that person has vacation this week and I have to work, so I'm jealous. So I feel like I feel like in a way envy can have more positive connotation.
Okay.
And envy has more resentment. I mean, jealousy has more resentment attached to it.
It's almost like jealousy has more of a physical component. It's kind of like a wound. It's like
good point.
Yeah, it's like it's unreasonable.
Envy is more of a state. Jealousy is more of a.
It's an activity.
Activity is a surge of emotion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. More of the time, but there's obviously some overlap. Here's how I think of it. Jealousy is attached to perception of loss. So jealousy has a bit of the Padma or Ratna neurosis. You know, you see your partner flirting with somebody who's better looking than you are, and you feel jealous. Jealous is... I don't do jealousy that well. But it has an object. And there is a malevolence to it. It's a green-eyed monster. Envy is noticing that somebody has something that you want or is somebody that you would like to be. Now, how do you respond to that? Well, NVIDIA, if you look at how Dante looks at it in the Purgatorio, is rejoicing when what?
No, that's good.
Rejoicing at the ill fortune of these people who have something that you want.
Schadenfreude.
That's envy in terms of NVIDIA. It's a rejoicing in the downfall of others. And of course, you know, the news, the gossip columns, all that, our political news is all sort of tied, not all, but a lot of it is tied together by, you know, watching people who are up there, who we resent for one reason, get their comeuppance. That's Schadenfreude, that's NVIDIA. And obviously, this can be malevolent.
But they don't always have what we want, except maybe power.
Of course, we tell ourselves that all the time and say, well, they may be whatever, but they may be a billionaire and they can do anything they want and they're like, you know, this incredible plastic surgery, they look like they're like 25, they look like I'm 65, but it's just whatever. And so we rationalize our resentment and try to make ourselves feel a little bit better. And, you know, I see a number of people smiling, so we have that in us. Nobody's proud of it. It tends to dissolve social bonds. It tends to be very, it's not only painful, but it's isolating, it is difficult. And we all do that to some extent. So that's NVIDIA, that's envy, that's also... And another word that's associated with karma energy is competitiveness. And Shanti Deva, who is clearly a karma type, maybe that's why I like his book so much, says that we are proud with inferiors, resentful with superiors, and competitive with equals. Chapter 8. And he's really good, by the way. And Muffy, you'd like this. You should read the end of chapter 5. Because he talks about how we can deal with the crazy stuff we do in our mind when something good happens to somebody and we resent it. It's just lovely. At any rate, so we are proud with inferiors, we are resentful with superiors, and we are competitive with equals. It's a very gloomy picture of the world from a neurotic karma energy point of view. Obviously, we know there's much more complete than that, but what he's trying to do is bring us down to a very base level so we can begin to work on compassion and love. He sort of starts us from a place of, this is who we are and we better change. So, oh good. How do we, this is lovely, I have my outline right here. So, and another word with competitiveness is comparison. By the way, Trungpa Rinpoche, in one of his books, noted that the Tibetan word for envy, it sort of means a full shoulder. And it's basically looking over your shoulder at other people.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So you can't just be yourself. You have to compare yourself with how other people are doing. And so obviously this can become very malevolent. This can also become sane. Is competitiveness sometimes a good thing? We know it is. I mean, the early Renaissance was sprung with art competitions. Who's going to finish that dome in Florence? Who's going to do the panels on the baptistry? And they had contests. And people won those contests and they lost those contests. And what was interesting is because of those contests, they came out with great art because people were looking over their shoulder at what the other person was doing. I want to do better than so-and-so. That Gaberti person. Mm. Well, at least I can... If I can't beat him, at least I can build a dome. So, competitiveness is also, well, they say, whoever they are, that if you want to like improve your tennis game or your chess game, who do you play with?
Play with
somebody who's a little better than you. Not a lot better. I mean, you know, not going to get Andre Agassi is not going to help your tennis game. He may be great to hang out with, but you know, it's not going to help your tennis game. If somebody's a little better than you, you get better. And friendships have that quality. You hang out with people who know something better than you know it, or can do something better than you can do it. And you sort of, in a sense, I'm not saying you're trying to catch up, but there's a quality of, I can really work with this through this person. And that can be a very sane kind of competitiveness. So, in some ways, karma energy is somewhat the ugly duckling of the five. Because it's objective, doesn't well with positive feelings about things. It's sort of austere, and it's dark. But a lot of shit can happen. So, now, when you get to Mahayana, so what do we do about envy? How do we work with, because obviously we don't, most of us, what we do is we try to ignore it, pretend it's not there. It can eat away at us and we'll try to soothe ourselves somehow or make ourselves feel better, but that doesn't solve the problem. How would we actually work with envy?
Say, in school we say is you look and see, what is that person doing that I'm not doing? Like, how come they're better at whatever it is? They must be doing something better. What is that? Like, let me look at what they're doing to figure it out instead of, like, bad-mouthing them.
Right. So you're changing a negative attitude of resentment into a constructive attitude of, if I envy something because they have what I don't have, how do I get it for myself? Very pragmatic.
Turn it into admiration in some way.
I'm sorry?
You're admiring them rather than...
You admire them instead of resenting them. Is that easy?
Depending on how karma you are.
How karma you are. There's, you can even go one step further. I'm sorry?
I don't think it's that hard.
Okay.
So you're more enlightened than he is.
Excellent.
Comparison.
Hey, let's have a contest.
Let's have an enlightenment contest. I think there are personality elements as well as whatever.
Sure, of course.
Because there are, I was just thinking about people who are so happy to be sort of fans of people or to really be supportive of them.
Yeah.
And it probably depends on different things or different situations.
Sure. Right? Yeah, we can.
So I never get anything done.
Well, but
somehow I doubt that.
In the form of enjoyment and rejoicing over other people's good qualities.
That's where we're going.
Is the antidote, of course.
See,
and because I just want to factor something in, which means that we actually partake of that other person's good fortune by being rejoicing over it. I mean, it's not as though it's just over there. If I actually can enjoy that, I'm part of that situation.
Yeah. So, remember, NVIDIA is rejoicing the downfall of somebody who you envy, who you have resentment? Well, its antidote is rejoicing over the good qualities or the accomplishment or the attributes that they have. And I find this really hard. Hard. And I also know that it is a magic key toward loosening up and sort of opening my world. So I, as a karmic person, I work at it.
It's on your
to-do list.
It's on my to-do list. That's right.
Just thinking, so in one sense, envy comes from a strong sense of separation.
Yes.
That we are, I'm thinking, I never envy anything that my children achieve. I feel like that's something.
Oh, sure.
Because I feel like there's no separation, My child does something wonderful. So if somebody else's child does something wonderful and I don't feel that, then that means I feel like, oh, wow, that person is out there and I'm here.
Exactly.
And I think fostering connection for me.
Yes, it's easy to have great pride over your kids' accomplishments, but how about your neighbor's kids, especially if your neighbors have a nicer house than you do? All of a sudden, you're not rejoicing in their good fortune. It's like, So, the lovely thing about this is that when we're sensitive to it, it's like in our face. We see how we seem to smell it out. We seem to find it in our environment, and it can be so habitual. And we can work with that. We can work with rejoicing. We can work at looking at different perspectives. Like if this was my kid or if this was my partner, I would be delighted, especially if they won the lottery. But one can go even further. I mentioned the kitchen at Karma Choling. And I remember when, this was like 1983, and I was giving a tour because I had kitchen duty for these group meditation retreats called Datuns, and there was a work period. So my work period task was I was going to show up in the kitchen, like cut onions and carrots and stuff like that. And I remember this made such an impression on me that kitchen had us all sort of introducing us and said, well, the kitchen is a very speedy place. But he said, but that speediness is not a problem. It can be all-accomplishing activity, if you let it. And that struck me, because I remember people thought of me as speedy. It's like, is that Joe Crane? He's a nice guy, and he's smart, but he's really speedy, especially during the days in the Sangha where people tried to speak slowly and gently, and I thought it was such goddamn affectation. I wonder why I came back. But so the fact is that being speedy was not particularly a problem. It can be activity. How does that happen? Well, it helps settling down into adulthood. But so what do you think? How does that kind of energy, that kind of competitive, speedy, gotta do this, gotta do that energy, how can that become all accomplishing activity? What do you think?
Well, you can learn to relax with the activity, but let there be space within it, so mm-hmm. that actually things sort of come together on their own in many ways, that you don't always have to be full of ego making things happen, but actually be with what's arising.
Excellent. Right.
By the way, the person who just said that it happens to be a super, super karma. So she speaks from her own maturity.
Well, from my aspiration.
Let's leave it at that.
Now, what gets in the way of karma people is that sense of comparison, that's which also means they're not as together as I am. They're not as smart or as swift as I am. I better make sure it happens right, so I better do it myself. Mm. Karma people are terrible at delegating for a while. Then they realize that the only way to get stuff done is to delegate. But it's a process. And also, you let go of that focus on what you are doing, and you focus on what's needed out there. You go from this to that. That relaxes the whole thing, and that makes the entire process of karma energy, it's like you're like being the wind. You can flow anywhere. There's no separation between you and what the environment calls for. So that becomes what's called all accomplishing action. It gets stuff done. It's like, you know, I have this thing. Ask Michael about those books. And Michael ordered the books already. I didn't talk to Michael about it. That's a very tiny, trivial example.
The other thing is that when you're tied up, focused on yourself, you're just creating, you're tying yourself up into knots. Whereas when you're extending openness, then you're simply seeing what's there, and you begin to realize what's appropriate. And a karma person is actually very good at just zeroing in on that.
Absolutely.
Addressing it on the spot, as opposed to, wait a minute, go figure this out.
There's a practicality, and there can be a flexibility. It's like, what do things call for? And that may mean, by the way, that things call for you to be Padma, for you to be engaging and sweet and lovable. And that may be part of getting stuff done, right, Emily?
Yeah, magnetize people. Get them to do it. Oh, really? Thank you, Elise.
So sometimes it's literally...
Sometimes. What did Elise say?
She said, oh, really?
So how does the karma person avoid making demands?
Good question. I knew you'd ask a good question. Okay. What's the mechanism through which a karma person makes demands?
Like decision making.
I alone can do it.
That's what Eric Prisna said.
Yes. I think he's come to regret. I hope, if he's smart enough, he came to regret that later. But he's not. There's a sense, all right, karma people are really good. I mean, as humans, we are much more aware of other people's faults than our own. Can we sort of agree on that?
Okay. Everyone else is.
Karma people are ingenious at taking everyone's inventory.
Right.
And seeing everyone as they need me because what would they do on their own? They'd be screwed.
Or you also see what skills everyone has. So you then are very skillful.
One can be, yes.
That's the answer to Aaron's question.
Yeah, giving the people actually, everyone has their own talent. So it makes more sense to match them up with something that they're really good at than something they're not good at.
It's like, once again, you're not managing people. People are managing you based on who they are and what they offer and what is necessary to carry something forth.
So, a complication with that is in the writings of Buddhism, at least what appeals to me is it says, let go and accept the unfold.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, somehow, the demands have to be quite secondary to whatever does unfold.
But what is unfolding may require activity from you.
Yes.
That ignoring that what is required is ignoring. That
next week.
That's right.
Split a family next week.
Next week, okay.
Yeah, so fear and
I mean, our passivity is, you know, we do that. We select things out because it makes us too uncomfortable or we don't think we know how to handle it. And so karma energy, and Buddhism they used to say that Buddhism was, quote, quietistic. And that's complete garbage. Because if something calls for activity, you do it. And you do it cleanly. You do it without making a big deal of yourself.
Erica? Well, I was just thinking in particular about the enlightened activity, which is where we're going, basically. Mm-hmm. And that it's sort of surprisingly, it's called destroying, which is really interesting, that actually it has the capacity to cut bullshit where it needs to be cut without hesitation.
See, Erica made my transition for me.
See?
Well done.
And I called on her. Don't forget me.
And what's really interesting is that you think of Vajra as being so cutting, the symbol, and so on and so forth. But really, it's karma that Vajra sort of has the intellect, the sort of game of the intellect, let's say. Mm-hmm. But karma family has the activity.
Mm-hmm. Has the skillfulness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Know.
That's why it corresponds to the fourth skanda.
Oh, that's right.
Am I jumping again?
No. I missed it.
All about how everything works. You know, when you actually look at the mechanic of phenomena, what's going on? Where is all the stuff? When you actually look at a list of the skandhas and what they are, the fourth skandha is huge. It's got this gigantic.
Okay, let's talk about the samskaras or the formations for a moment. Okay? Because the different Buddha energies are different heaps or different components of who we think we are. And basically, sometimes the word, instead of formation, they'll use the word concept. And remember, karma wants things to happen efficiently. And so what we have is this diffuse universe of perceptions and feelings and forms, and we don't quite know what to do with it all because it could be dizzying and blurring. What does samskara tells us what we're thinking about something, what our attitude is. There are positive samskaras, there are negative. Positive could be faith, gratitude, appreciation. Negative can be resentment, aggression. You know, we've all had situations where we're sort of confused and we say, oh, I'm angry. That's what's going on. It's like, that's samskara. You've just cut through a lot of stuff because you know you have a label to put on your state of mind. The universe, the world is organized. And we it can be very practical. We've had like crappy days and say, what's the matter with me? It's like, oh, I'm getting the flu. I feel better. It's like, okay, this makes sense. That's what the samskaras do, is to help make sense of the world. We know, however, that all these states of mind are labels. They come and go. They're not substantial, but they're very useful. So that's the current, that's the skanda of formation. But back to destroying. And you'll see, and this is where the color green associated with karma energy becomes more dark, is more wrathful.
It's called an enlightenment activity as opposed to a problem.
So how does that happen?
Well, I think what Erica was saying in terms of just cutting it off, whatever it is, it's like, okay, stop. We're stopping this now. And then by destroying whatever was, you know, a problem, supposedly problem in the room, then, you know.
Sometimes they'll call it anger without hatred. And what is hatred? It's a crystallized, fossilized, dualistic attitude. And instead, you know, sometimes the example is used like, you know, a parent with their kids. You can be, you know, you need to be cutting. You need to, you know, get them from doing science experiments with your Clorox in the bottom of your sink. You need to, you know, make sure they're not playing, what's it called? World of Warcraft at 2 in the morning. And so you need to be a little wrathful. You need to get their attention. You need to get their amygdala going. You don't, if they get their amygdala going, they will remember this.
I often think of when my son was little. And there's a certain point when your kid starts running into the street that you go, no! And you give him a potchkin on the bottom. And that's Yiddish.
Right? Yiddish. I figured like that, but I don't know that word.
It sounds like bad Yiddish.
Well, okay. Well, it's useful. And it's like that cuts it. So that they're... But it isn't like you're not hanging out being angry
at
the little guy. It's you did the act. You did what was needed.
You did. So the key word would be responsive.
Right.
This is what it's called for. And you do it, it's over. And it doesn't. You actually are not creating karma that way. You're just responding to what is necessary, and that can be wrathful. Now. There are what's called the four karmas, and those are different versions of enlightened activity. And wrathful is one of them, usually associated with karma, the karma family. But
wrathful is connected with vajra, actually. Karma is
I've seen both.
Destroying and subjugating.
Yes, destroying and subjugating. Okay.
Come on, dear.
The four karmas aren't on this sheet.
No.
Are they?
No. The four karmas can all be within karma.
They can all be within karma, if necessary. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Karma has got the...
Yeah.
It's just like the four skandhas. Everything's in there.
Sure. You know. Sure. So there are some basic symbols. One is the sword, the flaming sword. You'll see that. And remember, the sword is not necessarily to be used, but it can intimidate, can establish authority. And so a karma sword can cut through if it needs to, but it does. It can stay in the scabbard as well.
But it also cuts ego.
And it also cuts
two
ego.
Two sides, yep. So self and then the confusion about the phenomenal
projections.
And then there's the bell, or ganta, and you've all seen the small bells. And that is the idea of activity as proclamation. And when you ring the bell, everyone hears it. And it is unavoidable. And then the deity often has a cross vajra. And the idea is that goes in all directions in definite activity. So,
and there's a protection involved in that, the cross vajra. Mm-hmm. So it's protecting energy, which makes sense that karma family would look in all directions and be aware of any danger. And there'd be some sense of destroying the enemy and therefore protecting the space.
Yeah, and you'll see in the Tibetan iconography a lot of these sort of very demonic-looking deities that are protectors. And they basically, they're there in the environment to remind you when you're about to screw up. And you're supposed to actually try to invoke their energy. So the environment is being sort of all-accomplishing toward you. It's communicating with you.
Or if you do blow it, then you magnetize them into your life.
Sure.
In terms of feedback.
Where, right.
You know,
You know, how often are we speeding along the road, we see a cop car at the other side of the road, and we slow down. Even though that cop is way over there, has no way of knowing what you're doing, but you still slow down anyway. That's a little bit of the protector principle.
So the karma person could be a really good manager.
You bet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. CEO.
If they learn to delegate. Otherwise, they'll neck it out of the stock room because they'll be really good at stocking shelves.
That's good.
Remember, I was a really good when I was 17, I was a really good busboy. At the age of 18, I was a terrible waiter because I could like wipe out this whole bunch of tables and get everything off it and and do all that in a hurry. But in terms of the space of communicating, and what would you like, sir? All that crap. I just couldn't do that.
A lot more is required to be a good waiter than
I'm
that.
I'm sorry?
If you're a waiter, you have to keep a lot of balls juggling at the same time.
That's
so
right.
It's a lot more than communication.
Oh, for sure.
I was a brilliant waitress.
I bet.
You know, I put my flag down.
I could see that.
Because if you're a performer or an actor, you have to be a waiter at some point, waiter, waitress at some point, essentially. Certainly if you're a rock singer, yes.
Okay. I think we've run out of time. If there's any, and of course, we're always, I got through everything by 9:04.
Perfect.
Just like I wanted.
Excellent.
Perfect timing.
Perfect time. That's the plan. So, I hope you will take all that we've said and be very productive, but gentle over the next few days. And karma people can take themselves too seriously. You don't have to buy into that.
Okay, so we'll close.